Hepner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of conversations with remarkable working women. And I am really thrilled to be talking with my friend, Sam DeGennaro, the founder of DeGennaro Communications. Sam, welcome.
Hi, Katie. Thanks so much. So excited for you with this podcast, and I'm thrilled to be here.
So we've known each other for many years, many, many years. And I would love if we could start, because I remember when you told me we were in Cannes that you were going to start your own firm. Can you give us just a brief outline of your career until you started DeGennaro Communications?
Absolutely. So I grew up at my first 13 years in the working world, and we have known each other a long time, probably about 30 years at this point. But my initial entree into the working world was all through global ad agencies. I worked for many years at DMB&B, which got rolled into Publicis, which sadly no longer exists. It was a venerable global brand. And then I worked for another bunch of years at J. Walter Thompson, which is now Wunderman Thompson, the unfortunate consolidation of our industry. I was always in, well, not always. My entry-level job, believe it or not, was in production. And maybe that's why I, to this day, still have an anal attention to detail, as well as being able to think big and have vision at the same time. But the majority of my early career in those first 13 years was in corporate communications and corporate marketing roles, the culmination of which was running the global corporate communications team at JWT before I left to found my business in 2005.
So what motivated you to start your own firm?
I had always had entrepreneurship in my DNA. I think my dad was an entrepreneur, and I just always had the gumption to have a side hustle or some sort of business. I was always thinking about starting. And what truly motivated me was that I loved doing what I was doing, but I'm a very positive person generally and naturally. And I was feeling beaten down and deflated by some of the politics and just bureaucratic slowness that at the time I was witnessing and feeling at the company I was with, large global slowness. It's sort of funny and ironic because I wanted so badly to get that promotion and to get on the track from running comms for the New York office of JWT to then the North American comms role to then the global role. And when I finally got up to global and I was sitting in the corporate hallway with all the global execs, I realized it started sucking the soul out of me. I was farther and farther away from the actual creative product and the work and the movers and shakers at the New York office level and even the North American level, whom I admired and respected and loved. And I just felt like there had to be a better way of doing what I loved doing, mixing in my entrepreneurial desires and doing it on my own terms. And I started my business thereafter.
Well, tell us about your business.
DeGennaro Communications is a boutique specialist B2B PR agency. And I lean into B2B very heavily because there have been times in our 18-year history that we've done consumer work, and we did it well, and it was a burgeoning practice, but it never represented more than 15% of our business. We've always been very squarely B2B, and now we just have decided we are B2B and proud of it, and we've got a creative way to borrow from all of the experience that many of us have in the advertising industry and in creative industries like entertainment and music, and applying that creativity to our solutions. The verticals we service are media, marketing, technology, primarily MarTech, ad tech, fintech, and entertainment. And we do programs ranging from earned media and thought leadership and news bureau straight through to B2B marketing, anything from sales enablement and collateral straight through to content strategy, sponsorship strategy, partnership strategy, and event activation, and anything in between.
And anything in between. Well, tell me, what has been now, I mean, you have a company of 28 people, right?
And 28 sitting in New York. I would say probably about upwards of 30 to 35, but keep going.
So a very decent sized company. What has been your biggest challenge?
My biggest challenge, I would argue, has been not having a partner, a true partner who thinks like a founder, like a business owner, like an entrepreneur, somebody to bounce ideas off of with ownership, who could really scale the business. If I, running this business, could scale it to 5, 6, 7 mil in top line revenue, imagine if I had a partner of equal weight and they were off doing their thing. I feel like we could be at this point double the scale, double the innovation, double the offering, et cetera. Now, I am incredibly fortunate to have a very, very strong team of executive leaders. So I don't for a second want to diminish any of the senior level work that any of my people are doing. But had I had that partner from the early days and we had really grown this and scaled the business together, I actually do believe we'd be considerably farther along today. So we're catching up late and it's great because we're on a good trajectory right now.
What do you think has been the biggest reward?
I love being independent.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest advantage to not having a partner is that I have a very clear vision. I know what I like to do. I've got a very open-ended outlook on the possibility of this business. And I don't have to negotiate that vision or the decisions with anyone at the end of the day. And I lead democratically. I like my executive team to have a voice and to have input in big decisions for the company. But at the end of the day, I realize that the buck stops with me and I can veto or make a decision. And there are sometimes I just totally empower my exec team to make decisions because I know they're better at something than I am. I love surrounding myself by people who know shit a lot better than I do. But what has been the biggest, the question was, what's been the biggest reward, correct?
Correct.
I think the biggest reward overall is I just love our client roster and I love my team. Oh, and I'm not just talking my executive team. I'm talking the entire team of 30, 35 people, because I think we hire well. I think we hire smart. You know, a lot of agencies say this, Katie, but we've got the no assholes policy, both in terms of clients and in terms of teammates. We've got good radar. We really try to keep our clients tight, people we want to work with, whom we want to work. I'll stop there. And very proud. That's rewarding to me. We're solving business problem. B2B is fun. Like, a lot of people don't like B2B. They think it's boring or stuffy. I love it. We are working with the C-suite. You are as well. We're working with amazing, brilliant minds, CEOs, chief revenue officers, chief creative officers, chief marketing officers. That's fun, I think, solving business problems.
Don't you agree?
I totally agree with you. I agree with a lot of the things that you said there. Definitely the no assholes policy. We try to stick with that as much as we can. And sometimes if we realize we haven't, we have to backpedal and change lanes because life is really too short. Yeah. And I also love what you said about surrounding yourself with smart people. You know, I learned that from Chuck Porter and Alex Boguski early on that, you know, and I find sometimes, tell me if you agree with me or not on this, that with women especially, I believe, and maybe I shouldn't even say this, but sometimes they're afraid to be around other smart women because they want to be the smartest woman in the room. And this goes for everybody, but I've found it more with women. And yet when you surround yourself with smart people, everybody shines, including you, because you put everybody in place.
100%. You know, the women thing, I feel like it's been talked about, it's been written about. I agree. And by the way, have experienced in my career women who don't support other women, whether the motivator of that is that they don't want to be shown up. They want to be the smartest. Who knows? It could just be insecurity. It could just be social norms that we've all grown up with, where, you know, we grew up in the 60s or the 70s or whatever, thinking that the men were the smartest people at the table, if that's what our parents and our role models taught us. And I think it's a different time now and a different generation. And it's great to see so many women pulling so many women up, because I agree with you 100%. We're here to support each other, as evidenced by us having this conversation. I mean, you and I, yes. in theory, we're competitors in the marketplace, but we are friends, and we always have been. We've always been strong supporters of each other. We each want to see the other succeed. Sometimes we pitch against each other, and may the best person win it for that particular client and at that particular moment. And we do so with grace and respect and dignity. And that's how we all can truly coexist if we choose to. And not everyone chooses to. And that's unfortunate.
Said very eloquently, my friend. So I won't even add to it. But I want to talk to you now about something different. One of the reasons I really wanted to talk with you today, because you are a driven woman. You know what you want. You're very successful in business. You're someone who goes for what you want. And one thing that I've known about you for many years was that you always wanted to have a child, which you did on your own. So can you talk about that a little, please?
Absolutely. And thanks for bringing it up, because I do think these are stories that are important to share, because there are probably plenty of other women out there like me who chase their career and chase their travels and their wanderlust and everything else. And because we're told we can do so because of all of the advances in reproductive technology and science and innovation around the field of fertility, et cetera. But we don't necessarily know how to do this. So, okay, where do I start? First of all, you're right that probably as long as you've known me, I've always wanted to carry a child, but I've also gone through different stages where I thought I would adopt. I've gone through all sorts of different stages. What I did know as a non-negotiable, like to my core, I have felt it in every cell of my body, probably since I'm like 15 years old and was a babysitter. I always wanted to be a mom. I did chase my career. I had fits and starts basically for the past 15 or so years of my life. I was in two long-term relationships, two different men. One of them, the first of whom had already been married and had grown kids and wasn't really interested in starting a family. The second of whom was open to starting a family, and we tried, and we weren't successful. It didn't happen. However, and I should say, when he and I split up, I moved on to the road of adoption. And then the pandemic hit. And for whatever reason, not only did adoption seem to come to a screeching halt, like the rest of the world, like so many things in our lives, but there were also I had a few bad situations with scams and people claiming that they were interested in giving their babies up for adoption and looking for money. And thank God I had a really good adoption attorney who vetted these opportunities for me and sniffed out scams. And I would say, to anyone interested in adoption, there are some people out there who prey upon individuals or families who so badly want to become parents. So just get yourself a good attorney, get yourself a good agency, whichever path you take. But it was around April of 2020, literally a month after the world closed down for the pandemic. I was turning 50. I had gone through this breakup with my ex, and I was sitting alone during the pandemic trying to figure out what I was going to do to start a family. And I decided, because I actually had some frozen embryos, I had frozen my eggs. I'm getting very, very, it might be too much information, but I think it's important to share. I called up my my reproductive endocrinologist, whom I had worked with a number of years earlier when my rounds of IVF didn't in fact work. And I said, look, I'm turning 50 this month. I still want to become a mom. Adoption hasn't been a great path for me. Is there any way I can still carry? And he said, come in, I'll check your uterus, I'll check a bunch of stuff, blah, blah, blah. He took my blood work, he checked me, and he did whatever tests he needed to do. He's like, you're a perfectly healthy 50-year-old woman. You absolutely, there's no good reason we can't give this a try. I said, I'm giving it one try. This will be my Doug Flutie Hail Mary. And I gave him some feedback that when I had gone through IVF earlier in my 40s, all of the hormone, I was so jacked up on hormones and what women put their bodies through and like having to shoot stuff up and take these meds every day. I felt like a crazy person. Like I was having mood swings. One second I was on top of the world. The next second I felt like I was involuntarily crying and I wouldn't even know what triggered it. And I bring this up because I believe that we all have our ups and downs in life. And sometimes that carries through into our moods in the workplace. We have to show up as our best self and we have to get our work done. But I believe that having some empathy and listening and asking our colleagues if they're okay, if there's anything that they need support on is so incredibly important. I realize I'm the boss. And while I was going through my darkest days of IVF and failed attempts and hormone injections and everything else, you know, I need to stand up as a leader. I need to continue to be a leader, and it may not be easy to approach the boss. I fully get that, but at least as it relates to our peers, to the people who report into us, some empathy, some understanding, kindness always so important. Long story short, and back to my real point, I asked my doctor if there was anything we could do in my last ditch Hail Mary attempt at IVF to not do all of the hormones I had done initially. And he said, oh yeah, we could give you a natural cycle. And I'm like, a natural cycle? Why didn't you, like, what is that? Why didn't you tell me that existed previously? He said, oh, because you were, to your point, Katie, like, I'm a person who takes charge and I want to get stuff done and I want to accomplish, I'm driven to accomplish my goals. He's like, you were on a path and you had a goal. And I was trying to take the most effective route. And I'm thinking, well, it wasn't that effective. So I don't know that you're thinking what's right, Dr. V. But anyhow, so we did this natural cycle, which meant that I wasn't jacked up on any hormones. It was just my natural endocrine system. And I got pregnant. And I truly attribute that not only to the natural cycle, but I attribute, this is my silver lining of the pandemic. During those early months of the pandemic, certainly in the year, the calendar year 2020, I was grounded. I wasn't flying all the time for business. I wasn't out entertaining clients or at industry events, eating big meals, drinking a lot of wine, et cetera. I was one of the people, and some people became alcoholics during the pandemic. I went to the other extreme. I was doing yoga every day. I was meditating every day. I was eating very clean because I was cooking for myself three meals a day every day. And I was not drinking because I was alone those early months. And I truly believe that my body probably got rid of a lot of inflammation. This is just my own theory, probably got rid of a lot of stress, and my body was ready to receive this embryo and this pregnancy. And I delivered my beautiful son, Leo, as a healthy 51-year-old. It was a hard delivery. I went into emergency surgery, so that was a little bit traumatic, but the pregnancy was good. And
That's amazing. And by the way, I had a hard delivery too, and I was 27. So,
Fair enough.
So, first of all, that whole thing is amazing. It really is a miracle. And I'm so happy for you. And I love receiving the Christmas cards of you and Leo. He's absolutely adorable. But I want to ask you, has being a mother made you look at work and work life differently?
I think that it's made me, you know, when you're a business owner, the buck stops with you. And it's hard to fully unplug. Where it's made me look at things differently. First of all, when I'm with Leo, and sometimes it makes me incredibly sad that my nanny is with Leo during the work week more than I, his mom, is. But when I am with him, I'm very focused, very present, and very mindful. And that's a non-negotiable for me, and that's very important. So our time together is quality time. May not be quantity time, but I really believe that the quality time and the bonding and the attachment is very important. I think it's also made me look at life in a different way. What really are my priorities? Who are the time vamps? Is that where I want to give my time? No. Who are the people I really value and want to spend time with? And how can I maximize my workday so that I am focusing my time to the best of my ability on the outputs, results, and tasks and initiatives that will really make a difference to my business, to my clients, and to my people, my team. So that's how it's made me shift. It's more about brutally prioritizing. And I'm not great at that. I still have learnings to do. And I am a person who likes to be helpful. So when I'm desperately trying to get out of the office at 6:40 each night to get home to relieve the nanny by 7, and if someone still happens to be around the office and needs my help, there are times that I forget that I've got to get home to the nanny because I want to help my colleague or my client or whoever it is. But I really try my hardest and have worked so hard to train myself to impeccably prioritize where my time is best spent.
And really, it's a change every day, right? I mean, that's the, a lot of guests have come on my show and I used to love to talk about balance. People seem to hate that. I love the word balance, but juggling whatever it is, it changes all the time. It depends. You know, so it's not a perfect balance or a perfect juggle every day. But one day is a little more, and then the next day you get home earlier to Leo.
And that, you're right.
You know,
you're right. And to me, I think the balance is about balancing work and balancing Leo. Where I'm a little bit out of balance right now is on the self, in the self-care front, which is why it meant so much to me to just unplug yesterday for my birthday and go get my 2-hour massage and like sit in the sauna and the steam. And I had like 3 full hours fully unplugged from the world where I just was able to like nurture myself. And that's what I've got to work on doing more of. Because at the end of the day, and this is, I mean this for everyone, men and women alike, if we are healthy, if we are nurtured, if we are taking care of ourselves, we will be better parents, we will be better partners, we will be better spouses, and we'll be better workers. We'll show up better in the world. So trying to believe we can be everything to everybody is a fallacy, and it sets us up to fail, I believe.
Ooh, that was so well said. And that sets me up perfectly for one final question. So I asked you this years ago, and I'm interested now to hear how you feel. Is there one piece of advice that has really helped guide you through your life and your career that you can share with us?
I'm curious what I said the last time, because I am a pretty like grounded person. I'm an earth sign. Like I know my stuff. I know myself. So I'm curious if it's the same thing, but I would say be authentic. Know who you are, show up authentically, be true to yourself, and look inside of you. The answers are, I lead from the heart. I also am very much in the mind a lot. I like empirical evidence. I like data points to substantiate my gut. That helps me just sort of bring it all together. But I know in my heart and in my gut, 95% of the time, what the right path forward is, whether it's for me, whether it's for my business, whether it's for my client, or whether it's for a colleague. And I know that when I trust that and I show up being true to myself, that's when I do my best work. And that's, it's so much more palpable. It's so much more believable. When I try convincing myself into something, because I think it's what we may need rather than what is right, that's when it doesn't work. And I'm much more a person about standing up for what is right, even if it's the unpopular solution, and giving real counsel, even if it's not what someone wants to hear. So I'd say trust your gut, believe in yourself, and let's all get each other's back. That's not the one piece of advice.
That's but, extra. But
in
That's
general, yeah, like let's have each other's backs. We can all coexist the way you and I are here today, Katie. We've got five other, I don't know if we have five other literally, but we've got other competitors in the marketplace. Some play more snarky than we do, and some play more sneaky than we do. And I just don't think it's necessary. There's plenty of business to be had. There's a huge talent pool out there. Let's get each other's backs. We will make this industry, our lives will make everything much more positive. Call me Pollyannic, but I do truly believe that.
So take the high road, be authentic. It's worked for you wonderfully. And thank you so much, Sam. This has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. You are the best. I admire and respect you and appreciate being on this show.